Just a little bit of housekeeping, guys. We do have more chairs up the back behind the curtain. Some of our staff are currently distributing those. We've actually got four sessions booked out over this week. I think we're going to hit about 60-70% of people this morning, probably. So obviously a popular one, and great to have everyone here and with us. Very exciting to be kicking off the Term 2 Leadership Series today. And without further ado, I'd like to hand over to our Deputy Director General, Jane Simmons, who's going to do a bit of acknowledgement and introduce the session today. So thanks, Jane.
Good morning, everyone. Just checking you can hear me. I was going to do a sound check. Great, thank you. Can I begin by acknowledging that we are on Ngunnawal land this morning, pay my respects to Aboriginal people past, present and emerging, and to acknowledge our Aboriginal colleagues and the role of playing in education. What a great turnout this morning. Sorry we haven't got the Marion and the great view behind me, but I did say to Mark, I didn't realise there were this many people coming this morning because we've got two sessions, but it's so great to have you here and really looking forward to being able to share with you what we're doing for the year. I think you've heard this before, but as you know, as we commence the year this year, we talked about our 50th anniversary for the ACT public school system. And in 2023, as you know, we're celebrating our 50th anniversary, and you've seen plenty of media about that. And someone told me that 50 is the new 40, so I'm yet to experience that, being over 50. But, you know, radically different in structure, governance and curriculum to any other school system in the country. I think that's something we often forget here in the ACT. And we should be really proud of our ACT public school system and the success that we've been able to achieve for the students in our schools. Since I arrived, I've heard all these stories about Heavy Bear and all these quotes about Heavy Bear, and every time I'm here I walk past a picture of Heavy Bear. And Heavy Bear, being the first departmental head of education in the ACT and founder of our system, believed that the ACT school system could be one of the most visible and creative school systems in the world. A system where students' needs are paramount, where over almost everything we do, we ask ourselves how this affects kids. A system that is dedicated to the love of children. And this is something that every one of you espouses in the work that you do every day in our public schools. Over the last little while, it's well known that we've been dealing with COVID. And in many respects, COVID has brought us opportunities and it's also brought us challenges. A principal that I really respect, a principal that I worked with very early in my teaching career, and a principal who I would say has been my inspiration over many times and many times when I've spoken to groups of people. Phil Tucker, who was principal of Westfield Sports High School, was my principal when I was a young teacher. And he used to say to me, Jane, with challenge comes opportunity. And over the past little while, we've had some challenges. COVID has certainly brought us some challenges. In many respects, COVID brought people together. I think the first few months of COVID, my reflection was, wow, it's going to bring the teaching profession together. We're going to do all these wonderful things. It's going to set us in a new trajectory, thinking it was only going to last for a few months. Little did we know it would go on for a few years and will continue to go on for us. Also, COVID has also pulled people apart. So it's also put us in a position where we're not always physically together in the same place. We have differences within our school settings. And as we move into our, apologies for that sound, I had to try and move that, it annoys me. As we move into the sixth decade of our system, we believe there's no time to reflect on our current approach than there is now, and we need to refocus the work that we do, particularly around school improvement. So as we were pulled apart and at the same time pulled together, I think there's a realisation that COVID has put us in a situation where we will never come back to what it was pre-2019. Things have changed in a way that we'll never be able to go back to what it was. So in many respects, COVID also has reinforced something that I think underlying we always knew. So we've got 90 schools in the ACT, and every one of our schools is different. And COVID really reinforced the fact that every one of our schools is different, is unique, has its own context, and only you as leaders in your school understand what that looks like for your setting. So what we need to do and what we want to do is be able to, on that reflection, reset ourselves so that we have clarity around our purpose. We need to refine the work that we do. We need to demonstrate precision in terms of what we do to support the students in our schools and understanding those individual needs that we have in each of our settings. And we need to have a cohesive approach. Today we'll be discussing our student-centred improvement program of work for the year and beyond. And we will be putting students at the centre of our work, and we want to be able to do that in a way that supports you to be the leaders and the teachers in your schools that you need to be. We want to be able to put the evidence in the hands of the professionals, that's you, and provide support from the ESO that is responsive to the unique needs of the students in our schools and each one of the students in our schools. As you've heard many times before, we are a strong, high-performing system, and we can be incredibly proud of what our educators and students achieve each and every day. However, we cannot rest upon those achievements. We must continue our improvement journey. Beginning of the year, or earlier in the year, the Director General shared with you our four key areas for priority in the ACT. Inclusion, safety and wellbeing, student-centred improvement and workforce. They're not independent of each other, they are interdependent. And student-centred improvement is really the focus of our work. It's why we became teachers. We want to be able to improve the learning opportunities and experiences for the students in our schools. At the moment, we have some other things going on. We have a review of service design delivery services. We are looking at the services and how we deliver services to schools for the students in our schools and how that can support you in the work you're doing. That is happening as we speak. Over the last little while, Kate McMahon has been leading the Safe at Schools Task Force, where we've been focusing on what are the processes and systems and policies and frameworks that we can provide to support you in the work that you're doing in our schools. We've also, over the last little while, been focusing around developing a dashboard that's going to assist us to inform us of where the evidence is to support us in the work that we want to do in relation to not just school improvement, but everything that we do. So, reflecting on what Phil Tucker told me once, with challenge comes opportunity, it's almost like the stars have started to align. We're coming on the back end of COVID, time to reset. We're also got our service delivery work that's occurring, time to reset. And also we have the dashboard that we're developing and the work health safety work that's happening, time to reset. Our focus is to provide you with a framework and support you in the work that we do that can assist you to reduce workload, but also to ensure that we have precision and refinement around the work that we do for school improvement. The new model that Mark and Judy will lead you through today will move us from a focus on school process to student impact and growth, and allowing us to ask and answer from here to there, are we making a difference for our kids? And I know that teachers and leaders do that every day in schools, and we want to be able to ensure that we do that as a system in a way that assists us to make a difference in our public school system here in the ACT. I'm now going to hand over to Mark, I think. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay, just testing, is that still okay? Can people still hear that? Looking around the room, up the back, yep, fantastic. Really excited today to actually be talking to you about the Student Centered Improvement Program and start, I guess, conceptually, what's in the program, what are we planning to do, when are we planning to do it, and what that will look like over the coming this year and next. So Judy and I are just going to, I guess, loosely go through that at a high level, and then Chris is going to do a bit of a data piece around us around it later in the session as well, which we're looking forward to. I guess, where do we start? And I guess the current performance. If we're asked by the media or if we're asked in the Legislative Assembly how we're doing as a system, we say we're stable. And I think our system data, when we think about our overall system performance, has been stable now for quite a few years. So I guess we've been relatively high performing on a national scale, which has been great. We've got socioeconomic advantage, which we obviously have here in the ACT with the population, the students that walk in the door and the different life experiences and supports they get and the backgrounds and support they get from their families generally. There's a high socioeconomic mix here in the ACT. When we actually think about internally though, how are we actually going to get the lift? What do we need to actually break that stability and actually take us through that glass ceiling, I guess, that we've been in from a system performance point of view. And I think collectively that's been the challenge. But we're not alone in terms of understanding what do good systems do continually to go from good to great, great to excellent. So there's already a really solid body of evidence and research that we can draw on. So good systems to get to good. They tend to standardise their processes, they have common ways of doing things, they have shared investment in teacher quality, they have a lot of investment in common processes and language around school improvement. And if you think about our journey today, the National School Improvement Tool and the work that we've been doing since 2016 has really formed that platform form of common language and understanding around our school improvement language moving forward. So we've been on that journey ourselves when we actually look at how we get to good, but it's a different set of strategies and things we need to enact that actually will take us from good to great and beyond, and I guess break that level of stability that we've had in our performance data as a system now for a number of years. And I think that's really our collective challenge. And when we aggregate up everything that's happening for every young person every day in the classroom up to the system level, it's going to take a concerted effort across the board, and I think a challenge that we're looking to embrace. The nice thing about it though is the strategies that actually will get the good systems do to get to great and beyond is actually about cultivating ownership in school improvement through two things. Self-evaluation, so people reflecting every day, every term, you know, every week through constant reflective and evaluation cycles on the impact on what is happening in school on kids' outcomes. So that's definitely one thing that's seen in systems that are operating the great to excellent. The other thing, other than self-evaluation, is making the performance and wellbeing data more available. And the work that Chris has been doing already with many people in this room so far is releasing some of the data, the dashboards that we've been working on in the last couple of years to be able to get that information into the hands of professionals. So the nice thing on the 50-year anniversary of our system, which was founded in the belief that teachers professionals and we should be trusting them to make great judgments every day about what's happening to young people in our schools, not relying on an external assessment framework to do that, is that that's exactly the strategies today that we're looking to back in. Getting the data and evidence and information to the hands of the professionals, allowing you to act locally at the school level through a process of self-evaluation to assess the impact on that, you know, what you're doing in your schools is having on young people every day. So it's actually quite a nice thing to reflect on. The genesis of the system, the values by which we were actually founded, and the strategies that we actually need to enact now moving forward. So I guess that's just a little bit of an insight into some of the evidence and research. It was really good to hear from Viviana Robinson though at the start of the year, and her provocation, we know the collective impact of teacher quality. We know the importance of having high quality teachers in as many classrooms as possible and the impact that that has for kids, then collaborating collectively to assess their collective impact on students and the outcomes of kids. We know teacher quality has a high impact on student outcomes. It was great to hear from Vivian though that the level of impact of leadership in schools is just as powerful and impactful. So we actually need to not just focus on teacher quality, but collective efficacy in terms of leadership and empowering and enacting that with our school leadership at the local level. So that will be a key focus of the program of work going forward. How do we invest in the collective ability, capability of us as a system of leaders to enact the sorts of strategies, the self-evaluation approaches that are actually going to meaningfully lead to that uplift that we all aspire to for every child that comes into our schools. And the three key focus areas, I think Viviana really unpacked that really well at the start of the year. How do we look at solving complex problems? How do we look at integrating our educational knowledge into practice and translating that into actually making a difference in the classroom? And how do we actually build relational trust through the way that we're working in our schools to make sure that we're actually seeing sustained impact? So if you're going to ask me what's actually going to be delivered as part of the new program, the first thing would be the leadership dashboard. So the data dashboard that Chris has been sharing and doing sessions on from the start of the year, that's one of the key things, getting data and information to the hands of people in schools. That's a key output from the program, one that we've already done a considerable amount of work on and one that we're happy to lead out with. The second one is though we need is an evaluation framework. If self-evaluation is critical to what people in schools do every day in high-performing systems that continue to grow and improve, then what does our self-evaluation framework look like? So we need to consider a self-evaluation framework. The third one is that will have an impact on our planning and improvement cycles. If we're talking about assessing our impact on students every day, is a five-year plan conducive to that? So we do need to reconceptualise our school improvement planning cycles and actually look at something that's a lot more agile, a lot more fit for purpose, and a lot more continuous. Really importantly, we haven't released an updated Empower Leadership Plan. That's because we wanted to actually align it to this work. It's really important that we're actually identifying what are the skills that our school leaders need and people in schools and across ESO to enact this way of working under the new student-centered improvement program. The good news is a lot of that we've actually been investing in terms of spirals inquiry, multiple sources of data, how to run effective professional learning communities. We're not letting go of those. Those are still key capabilities that we will need. But we want to make sure that our leadership investment and what we're actually doing with you and what and we're doing collectively in terms of capability uplift is aligned to be having an impact on the new model. And the last one is, if you're there self-evaluating the needs of your students and you actually look at the needs of your kids and you identify gaps in knowledge or gaps in practice and support, how do we have the differentiated services available to you to meet you at point of need? And that's when Jane mentioned the service review. How does ESO provide you with the curriculum expertise, the pedagogical expertise, the assessment expertise, the resource management expertise that's actually fit for purpose to meet where you assess you're up to in your journey? And that's a big undertaking for ESO as well. We've got a lot of work to do in that space. So if you're going to ask me, I guess, at a simple level, at a high level, that's really what the outputs and the main areas of the program are going to be. We will have time to workshop this, ask questions as we go, so just if you've got any questions, just park them, and we'll absolutely unpack them as in the workshops. All right, so conceptually, how is this supposed to work together? We've got students in the centre. What are the needs of the students? What's the data and evidence say about kids that are walking in your school gate every day? That's the starting point. We don't want to start with process, we want to start with the kids, put the students at the centre. Understanding the needs of those students, you then self-assess against the self-evaluation framework. What does that mean? If the needs of our students are this, what does it mean for our pedagogical practices? What does it mean for the way we assess? What does it mean, you know, for the way that we do specialist programs and supports? What does it mean for our social emotional wellbeing program to meet the needs of the kids that are coming through the door? Once you've done that, it's then, okay, what strategies and interventions are we going to use to meet the needs of those students? What are the ones that we already know and can enact? What are the ones that we need more professional learning and development in? and how do we actually embed that in our practice at the school level? Where do we source that from, and what does ASO have on offer? How do we then review the impact of implementing those strategies? What's working? How do we adapt it? How do we change it to make sure we're getting an impact for the kids? And I guess the challenge for ASO is we then need to think about what is our differentiated support for schools based on the needs of students, based on the needs of the staff, so that we can actually be responsive and meet schools at point of need. We, in a perfect world, universal supports, common professional learning that's available to everyone is what sustains most schools. But we do have the need to target some resources into schools at specific points in time. We'd love to say we've got enough resources to respond to everyone at that point, but that's just not the world we're living. So we do need to be really precise ourselves with where do we put additional resources and supports at different points in time. So that's, I guess, the end state that we're kind of conceptually working towards. As I said, this is the front start of the program of work, but we just wanted to share, I guess, a bit of a conceptual framework and some of the deliverables that are in the program. So how are we going to go about it? There are elements of co-design. We've actually got a leadership group that we're working with that will be looking at the leadership dashboard, the evaluation framework, the planning improvement cycle, and the leadership capability plan. That's what we're actually looking like. Is this you, G? Sorry. This is going to be real quick. Pass over to Judy.
It's okay. When he gets on a roll, there's no stopping him, which is true. Good morning, everybody, and lovely to see you all. All of you. It's kind of overwhelming. I haven't had this many people in the hall for many, many years, but it is lovely to see you. And I guess it's a sign that it's great that you actually want to be with your colleagues and spend some time collaborating. So it's terrific. I guess what I really wanted to, Mark and Jane have talked about potentially the why, and Mark started to touch on the what, and I want to give you a sense of the how, and maybe do a little bit of a deeper dive a bit later into some of the key changes, differences and benefits that we're looking at. So it is about the how, and part of this is a little bit of reassurance, that it's not something we're going to say to you, we're not going to email out to you in a couple of months and say, okay, hi there, here's the new plan, and here's the new timetable and schedule, and this is what you're doing. That's not our intention here. This is a collaborative, this is a co-design. It's a unique opportunity that we've been given for where we're going to design something and we're going to do it. So it's actually, we're not getting a consultancy firm in, we're not paying KPMG big money to develop something for us. It's actually about us. And this process is being led by schoolies for schoolies. And we're going to seek expert advice and input and have critical friends. But ultimately, we've been given this unique opportunity to develop a school improvement model that actually reflects us, what we value and how we want to work. So we're very fortunate, and I mean that's one of the beautiful things about the ACT, that we're small enough to be able to do that. And we have great collaboration and trust amongst each other, so I think it is a terrific opportunity to do something like that. So I wanted to give you that reassurance and also to reassure you that it's a phased approach, that they'll, you know, this year, particularly to 2023, is actually about the co-design of the model, of the evaluation framework. It's the collaboration period. It's the checking in with you. It's the testing with you. It's feeding back to you. It's hearing your voice. 2023. 2024, we're looking at the transition year where we're testing and trialing. We're working through, is it working? Coming up with the prototypes this year to test next year, looking for some of those enthusiastic trial schools that want to come on the journey. And then by the end of next year, we'll be saying, okay, we've tested, we've trialed, we've heard. 2025, we're hoping to have full implementation and rolling it out. It's a big change, but we're going to do it in a phased, staged, really considered manner. I also wanted to reassure you that lots and lots of things that already exist will continue to exist. You know, we've done a really big jurisdictional search across the world, really, across Australia and across internationally, and there are so many features about school improvement that are similar. And we have many, many of them already. So lots of things won't change. What we really, I guess, want to do is to make the work, and to reduce compliance so that what you're working on every day is actually what feeds into potentially a review later down the track. So I wanted to really just talk a little bit about what that co-design and collaboration and change management looks like. So beginning of first term, I put out an expression of interest for the principals to join me in a principal consultation group. Admittedly, it was at the beginning of the year, so you might have missed it. I've got a great group of people, and I actually wanted to call them out today. So this group of principals are going to walk alongside Craig and I and the team this year, Chris, and they're meeting at least twice a term and possibly in second semester a little bit more often to do some more intensive work. So I really want to thank that group for coming on board and committing that time and actually being the voice of the principals. So we really tried hard to get a mix of sectors, so a mix of experience. So I've got first year out principals to principals who've been, you know, working in that sector for 10 years. And also wanted to make sure we got the networks covered so that if we needed to use the network meetings as an opportunity to feed back into the broader group, we could do that. So I want to thank David Briggs, Jackie Chapman, Samara Chisholm, Paula Kinsman, Rebecca Turner, Renee Berry, Merrin O'Day, Priscilla Ray, Megan Ottenberg, William Johnson, oh, better known as Will, Craig Edwards, Wendy Kay, Felicity Levitt, and Brian Downton for putting their hands up to be on that group. So thank you so much for that. I also wanted to just call out a couple of new people who are in the project team who have got another amazing set of skills and experiences that just are going to help us through the next 3 years, and that's Adam and Meg. So Adam and Meg, wave to the team. So they've been working in education for a little bit, but they're such a great asset to our team and bring, as I said, a whole range of different skills, which is terrific. So that principal consultation group is really where that co-design is going to occur. And then hopefully we can use forums, network meetings, other opportunities to feed back into the broader principal group and get your feedback on how we're travelling. Chris has also drilled into a bit smaller group and he's got a leadership dashboard co-design group. So as the work to continue to develop the leadership dashboard, he's got us some testing, little test group there of principals to work the way through that. We've also established a program board, which is a governance board, which is chaired by Jane, in which we'll meet twice a term to report, monitor, get feedback, ensure that we're fulfilling the aims of the project. You can see that we're using all of our other opportunities to consult and inform. We've already presented to CorpEx and to senior executive, and we continue to bring the minister and the AU on board as well. We're also working with our media comms team to ensure that all the way through we will be able to support you with materials, communications, potentially fact sheets, whatever that might look like. And hopefully the principal consultation group will be able to let us know what it is that you need to inform your board about changes, work with your parents, work with your staff. That'll be a great test to see what it is that you actually need to help you inform your community through these changes. So there's lots of support coming from there as well. So I suppose I just wanted to touch a little bit on, and before we give you an opportunity to have a chat in your groups, around the current and the future state. And I think Mark has mentioned it already, but in 2016 when this document, which has guided our improvement, has sort of been the policy statement for the last few years, the Green Booklet, was developed, and Brian Caldwell actually wrote that. And we implemented the INSET tool. It was really important because we needed to have a consistent language. We needed to be able to have that cohesion across the system. So it played a really important role in everybody developing a shared language and understanding about school improvement. And we need to recognise how important that has been in our journey. But as Mike alluded to, that got us to good, and now we want to go to great, and we want to go to excellence, which is actually about not using so much an external model around school processes, but starting to build back the value in the professional judgment and the self-evaluation that you will bring to the table. So it's been really important. And I guess the other thing is, we have such a strong foundation for where we are. We've done a lot of work together around professional learning communities, around spirals of inquiry. We've built culture in our schools to look at student data, to evaluate, to reflect. We've had a really strong leadership plan in the last 5 years. It's really built cohesion among the leadership teams. And we've done some great work together. So we're really in a strong position. Now what we need to do is have an improvement review model that reflects the way we work. Because we have a review and improvement model that we developed in 2016. And we're so much better than that now. And we're so much more mature, and we're so much further ahead. And we've got a bit of a disconnect between how we work, what we believe in, what we value, and actually then how we implement and review our schools. I'm trying to bring those together so that ultimately the work's the work. So I guess those key things about what I've talked about, what we currently do, and our school improvement process is largely process driven. It's about saying, if you do these things in your school, you will get better outcomes for students. And all of that work is absolutely valuable. Everything that the INSET tool does and says and recommends is actually really important and really valuable, and based on a lot of research. And does it lead to improved student outcomes? Yeah, sometimes. But the link is not super strong in our review process. So that's something we've got to strengthen. That's what we're aiming for. We implement these processes because we want to build teacher capability, we want to build culture, build safety, and we want improved outcomes. So we have to have a complete package when we're looking at school improvement. So we want to move on from process. Process is really important and really valuable. What's the next step? Student and evidence driven. Is it actually making a difference for our kids? Is what we're doing having an impact? Because in the end, that's what we've got to be asking ourselves. And at the moment, we've got a really rigid model. Everybody's locked in 5 years. You do what you do during the year, write an impact report, put in the board report, write an action plan, rinse and repeat for 5 years, and then you have this big hoo-ha after 5 years. Where an external person comes in using an externally developed tool and reviews you. So it's fairly rigid. We want to actually move. We believe, because we're small enough, that we can have a differentiated model. Perhaps not everybody needs a five-day review every 5 years. Perhaps you need, perhaps if you're traveling really well and you can demonstrate that, then you might need a day every 4 years. Or you might think, hey, I'm a new principal, it's not going well, I need to have a really deep dive. I want the full-blown shebang, and I want it in the third year. So we don't know what that's looking like. I'm just chucking that out there. This is the part of the co-design that we potentially could move to a more differentiated model that may suit the context of your school. These are the opportunities that potentially this model can provide for us, but it doesn't have to be as rigid as we have now. Or you might come back to me or ask the team and say, actually, we love it. It gives us confidence, we know what's coming, and that's okay. That's part of the co-design process. You get to keep what you value and what's important and keep what reflects the way you want to work. But there's opportunities to do it a little bit differently if we want to. And at the moment, it's a very linear process. It's annual, you know, then it's 5 yearly. And what we want to do is really honour and build in those cycles of inquiry so that it's more regular, it's more reflective, its ability to be adjust, respond to your students' needs. And so we really embedding the way we know works into our planning and the new model, which is cycles of inquiry. The other thing, and this is a really, this got a lot of text on it, and it's just to demonstrate, I guess, that the project team has done a lot of work around thinking about the key differences and the improvements. And I guess what I wanted to highlight here is, and I know Jane and Mark have touched on it, one of our guiding principles is around workload. So this new model is about reducing workload and actually making the work, so that you don't have a stream of compliance where you're filling in forms and submitting, and then actually you've got all these school processes where you do the work. We want to bring those together so that actually the work that you're doing every day meets the needs of the compliance. Now, in a perfect world, we have a really sophisticated business system that would enable us to do that, and that is actually one of our goals. So we'll get there. But certainly one of our under our principles underpinning it is around reducing compliance and reducing workload, and trying to really bring to the fore the work that we know that you're already doing, and making that actually the work. Mark's talked about and Jane talked about the review happening in STD, so that ESO is responsive and being able to provide services that are timely and the services that schools need. The other big strength that we believe this model is actually about respecting, putting the data in the hands of the professionals, honouring and strengthening the self-evaluation processes, and then we're coming in more of a validation type of process and actually validating your judgments and evaluations. So it's really about strengthening, respecting, honouring the profession, and actually building the cycles that go with that. So high levels of data literacy across all areas of the organisation. So Chris has been doing workshops with everybody. Adaptive leadership, evaluative thinking, so important building evaluative thinking. Student learning drives continuous learning across the organisation. And learning is supported through strong networks and cascading structures. So it's about that mutual accountability. Yeah, you're accountable for improving student outcomes, but we're also accountable for supporting you to do that. And that's that mutual accountability in a really high-performing, trusting organisation. There's that mutual accountability, and that's where we want to get to. So, time for you guys to have a talk. And as Mark said, lots of opportunity for questions. And we understand for many of you, this is your first dip into this, and you'll have things where you'll be going away thinking about. But remembering that principal consultation group is your first port of call in terms of, you know, feeding back in. And we've got a meeting, a workshop scheduled with them in week 4. So just know that's on the agenda. So what are your thoughts? Have a think. What do you think the opportunities are in the next, you know, this year and next year? What do you think the great benefits of this new model could be? What are the barriers? And we all know some of them will jump to the front of mind, but there's potentially other barriers that the team may need to be aware of. And I've just sort of put a little bit down the bottom there that says advice for the team, because I want to model being vulnerable, and I know how important that is in successful leadership, and I really value your advice and your input into how we can guide this work over the next 3 years. So happy to take constructive advice from the crowd, and we really value that. So have a chat with your group, have a talk about what you've just heard, what's popping, what are you worried about, and then make sure you get it onto paper, because we don't want you to be worried about anything that you're not sharing with us. Of course you might be worried, but we want to actually work with you. So have a chat in your groups. Thanks everybody. Yep. Hi everybody. Thanks everybody. Great to have some some really good conversations and lots of questions, of course, as would be expected. So we just wanted to see if we can capture some of the thinking and maybe some of the questions that your group might have had or some of the feedback comments. So Mark's doing the roving mic today. So happy just to come from the floor. Anybody who would like to make a comment, has a question, wants something clarified, or just wants to give us some feedback. I can't believe it's going to be this easy. Come on, team. This is co-design. Tell us what you think. Oh, Julie, thank you.
So we have an excellent question. Unfortunately, it wasn't mine.
But that's okay. Collaborative team, yeah.
But of the models researched, which ones were from high-performing sectors? So in terms of looking at across the world and different, like we heard before, like Ireland, Scotland, Canada, perhaps Finland. No, she didn't, but I just made those up.
Yeah.
That's not good. But which ones were review processes from high-performing systems, bearing in mind we're putting students at the centre, systems that have done that successfully and then have reviewed that successfully? Advice for the team. Thank you.
So the international and national really big research that we've done in the first term was around the evaluation framework in particular. One of the table groups just asked me then if Judy did a lot of preparation, are we getting rid of the insert tool, is the question that they asked. And my answer to that was yes, potentially that is what we're looking at. But we will have an evaluation framework. Every jurisdiction that we looked at across the world and across Australia has an evaluation framework. A couple of them in Australia use INSET, and I believe a couple of them internationally use the INSET tool. Most jurisdictions and most countries develop their own because they evaluate what matters to them. And that's what we want to do. We actually want to evaluate the things that the ACT values. Potentially there will be things similar to what's in the INSET tool, of course, because that's based on research as well. So the Principal Consultation Group spent their first workshop in Term 1 looking at all of this international research, looking at all of the frameworks from across the world. Julie, we looked at, as you said, Canada, Dublin's was a revelation, Scotland, Ontario, New Zealand, all of the jurisdictions in Australia. Some, interestingly, you can't get to because they're behind firewalls. So it was around which countries and which jurisdictions had them publicly available. So we've looked at all of these evaluation frameworks at a first cut and thought about what we liked, what we didn't like, what we like about the INSET tool, what we like, and the INSET tool is part of that evaluation. So there will be an evaluation framework about the things that we value in the ACT, and you'll get a look at that, and you'll get an opportunity to workshop that. And that evaluation framework, we really hope, will be a much more flexible and agile document, one in which you're constantly looking at in your cycles of inquiry in your leadership team. So you'll be looking at it in week 4 and week 10, and at the end of the year potentially, and then when your school review is. It's not going to be a different evaluation framework. It's going to be one where you're constantly checking in, and that it's going to be part of your cycle of inquiry, so that it's a much more agile framework.
Yeah, the other piece of that puzzle from a research point of view was we got Helen Templey's critical friend in this as well, and a lot of her research was leveraging McKinsey's analysis, but then actually with her work and research also, and a bit of a provocation in terms of what our next steps might need to be as a system, which is guiding our actions with that principal group. So Helen's going to be working very closely with that group of principals and ourselves as we continue the journey.
Other reflections, comments? Peter?
Great,
thank you. We'll collect,
so have some coffee. No, so a comment that was made at this table, which I thought was inspired.
Greg said that,
did you? I think we need to be aware that this needs to drive alignment from student learning all the way up to school planning. And so, whatever we come up with, there is a lot of work that hasn't been mentioned that will need to be done in how teachers prepare, teach, assess, report, and so on. So while I think this is a great step forward, let's not underestimate the scope of what needs to be done.
And I guess that was part of why I wanted to reassure you about a 3-year process. And of course, it could be 5 or 10 years when we talk about actually changing the way teachers teach, or which I'm not actually talking about now, I'm just continuing to talk about teacher quality and teacher skill and expertise. But we're always working on that. That's our core goal, isn't it? So, but I agree, these things take a lot longer than you would love to think that you can turn it around. So I wanted to reassure you that it's a stage phase and considered change management. Can you write that? Make sure you write that down.
It's written.
Right.
And signed.
Ah, well, I agree.
Yeah. All right, any other questions?
Great, okay, we'll hand over
to Chris. We're good. Guys, there's going to be lots of opportunities for more questions as we go. This is, as I said, the start of the process. So we'll hand over to Chris for a bit of an update on DAR.
Where's the thing?
Thanks. Just going to your point though, Peter, I think it's a really important part of what these dashboards and the work I've had with most of you is one of the really big purposes of the dashboard is actually to build evaluative thinking, but just as important, evaluative culture. So if you don't have an evaluative culture in place, you actually won't get any gain, you won't get any movement, and it's only through an evaluative culture with the teacher's work that's actually going to lead to any change. And one of the big part of the dashboards that we're going to do is that it is a over-the-top system view, but the work still is within the school. And those of you who, well, I think, what, 80% of you have done the workshops already, will see that out of a 4-step process in using the Pulse dashboard, and there'll be the sample leadership dashboard, 3 of those steps are actually not using the dashboard. 3 of those steps are actually you and your school-based data and your school-based processes and the cultures within your school, and that's where the leverage really comes from. And so the work with the evidence-informed leadership, that's a really great quote over the side there around what good knowledge is founded on, and we're in the knowledge game. So having good data, good questions, and engaging in good thinking. And it's about trying to find that nexus between innovation and evaluation. So innovation is really, really great. But if it's not guided by evaluation and thinking and impact, then you can innovate to what end? And the same with evaluation, if all you do is evaluate, then you will not innovate. So it's that nexus between the two that we're aiming to move through here. And so that's where the evaluative thinking comes in, where you're actually making plans and innovating based on evidence and data from your school and from your school setting. So term one, Pulse Dashboard, was initially released, all the workshops took place. As I said, 80% of you have done that, and a lot of you are accessing it already and using it for decision making. A lot of you are collaborating with other schools to find common themes of problems of practice, and a lot of you are then asking the next questions around what do we need to do at the school level to actually go down our lines of inquiry that we've explored through the dashboards. This term, so there's a collaboration group, and you'll get an email about a workshop shortly, collaboration group, but it hasn't quite gone yet. So it's partly made up of the group that Judy mentioned, because this next tranche of work, which is the leadership dashboard, it really needs to marry in a whole heap of things. It needs to expand on what the Pulse dashboard offers. It needs to marry in with the self-evaluation framework that Judy mentioned. And it then also needs to align with what schools are doing already. The reason I say that is that the learning data is not strong enough yet, and I was pretty open and honest about that during my presentations. So we're still exploring what that looks like. What does the learning data look like? And we actually have to build that from the school up to many extents. Because the schools have a whole lot of data that they're using. What's the problem sometimes is that schools have so much data, they're not knowing what data they need to use to make an impact. So that's where a dashboard comes in to help the school refine what's the data sources that they're going to be looking at, but we still have to understand what are the data sources that are of use to a school. And the learning data at the moment, the school-based data, is so much stronger than any of the system data that we have. So the idea is to see how that's happening, how we can form those lines of sight, so the school's going to be sorted in actually spending the finite time that they have and the finite resources that they have on the things that are going to matter. So that'll be the work of the collaboration group. And then we'll have the first release of the leadership dashboard, and it's called a first release in the version one of the leadership dashboard, because it will have to be iterative, it will have to change as there are new and better data sources available, as we get more clarity over what the self-evaluation framework's going to look like. All of those things have to happen, and we'll work the leadership dashboard as they are occurring. And that's a really strong collaboration with digital services. So they actually make the dashboard, they run the dashboard project, and with the principals and groups there. So it's actually a nice bit of work with lots of technical knowledge, but really strong school-based knowledge as well. But when I talked about the culture, we need to, like, so the vision for me really is that we have 90 schools having access to data that's going to lead them to lines of inquiry, to address barriers that are arising, to form school improvement strategies that are going to work across 90 odd schools. And so if all of those schools are doing all that, then the work that comes at the next level and the supports that have needed to be provided from ESO are going to be so much clearer for ESO as well as for you. Because you're going to know when you're trying to implement something, if there's a capability gap at your school, well, you know what that capability gap's going to be. ESO needs to come in with the supports. And guess what? ESO wants to come in with those supports. So to ensure that there's a culture being driven, we're proposing a few data principles, LES. And these can change, these can be amended, these can do whatever you need. And remembering again, the use of the data is to try and solve a problem. Problem in the term of Vivienne Robinson says there, which is that graphic on the screen. So a problem is the gap between the current reality and your desired future state. So that's what we're trying to do with all these data. So the principles up there. So appropriate, and I'll just unpack them slightly for you, although they should be fairly self-explanatory. Sorry, Paul, I'll keep on looking from here. Just nodding down and reading. Appropriate use of data. So these dashboards, as I said, inquiry and collaboration, not decisions, not judgment. You're going to always, throughout your career, have data that will confront you. You'll have data that probably will make you feel good, too. But where you spend your times and energies and efforts needs to be around inquiry for school improvement, that evaluative thinking. And then also collaborating with your teams and the use of that collective IQ and collaborating amongst schools. If we use data for just decision making and more dangerously just judgment, we actually won't build a strong culture of collaboration and a strong culture of evaluative thinking. Access and control. So transparency. If I can see data, you should see data. Really, that's what that means. If we're able to see data at a system level, why can't the schools see that data as well and use that to help them make decisions? And why can't we actually compile that data in a way that's meaningful and useful for you, where you can actually look at data sources together? So different data sources that you might not look at readily together, why don't we do that? And it represents the school needs, and this is where the leadership dashboard is going to be really important and built from what principals need to make your jobs easier. And putting in the things that you need to make your jobs easier, to help you make decisions. Security and protection, and I mentioned that in the workshops. So data security, respecting one another and the data of your school, respecting where it's come from, respecting that there's a context behind every piece of data that you see on a dashboard, because you, as you know, you can see every single school in the system. So keeping it confidential and making sure you're using it for school improvement. It's not no use using it for anything other than getting the best possible results you can for the students that you are serving. That's it. Now, these data principles, I want you to actually have a look at and a talk about in your table groups and see if they are what will help you. Remember, these data principles are something that we all collectively want to espouse, but we also want to put these data principles in through to ESO, in through to the senior executive. And so if we're going to create a culture of collaboration and a culture of evaluative thinking, well, these are the things that we need and the thinking that we need to be able to actually feel comfortable and driven in doing that. So in your table, you'll have a placemat. And can you think of that question as you're going through the placemat? They're written there, those data principles. Amend them, change some thinking, highlight parts you don't know, add parts you think are missing, write a new data principle, I don't mind. 10 minutes or so. Thank you. This table here, what did you have to say, Simon?
We talked about principals, but for all school leaders, and I know it changed the dashboard from principal dashboard to school leader dashboard.
Thanks, and that was sort of pre-planned. So it was a really good point. So that collective IQ of the leadership team, I think, is an important component here, which is why the leadership dashboard is called the leadership dashboard, not the principal dashboard. But we have to take baby steps to some extent with, you know, all schools, all data, all of those sorts of things, build trust, build our principals, LES, into how we operate, and then absolutely have school leaders accessing the data, and that's really, really important. Adam, you had something to say? So Adam was on his phone. Just so everyone's aware.
Yes, we talked about the benefits of the PBL dashboard and how it was fantastic, but how you navigate that issue across all the schools and the different metrics and data that we're collecting. Pretty aspirational. Just how good it would be to then look at it instead of snapshot in time, having data that could move between schools, between schools.
To
use the same functionality?
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry to pick on you.
It's all right.
I was going to pick on you anyway. It was an opportunity. That's right. So the transferability of data, so not only between schools, but from year to year. And then I do have the PBL dashboard, and people found that quite useful. You can filter down, extract really key pieces of information. And the idea of the leadership dashboard, which is the Pulse dashboard at the moment, the leadership dashboard is the umbrella. It puts pieces of data together that you normally wouldn't put together. Underneath that umbrella will sit PBL dashboard, which is out already, the Safe and Engaging dashboard, which is about to be released to you guys, and then we developed a learning dashboard as well, which then allows you to do your fine analysis of those data to then go into your school-based data to make your decisions. So that's how it will work.
A lot of dashboards.
A lot of dashboards,
Chris.
Only use ones you need, Bill.
You know, I wasn't going to say this, but I think I should. I really like the idea of innovation and us changing. We need to change with the times. There's often a few things we don't talk about, and it's okay in a school if you have PLCs that aren't simply run and shouldn't be run only by principals who have access to dashboards and all sorts of data. If you've been able to put together the right exec team, it's wonderful. But if you're struggling to staff, we're not talking about teachers, which we all are at the moment. I think we've also got to look into our staffing in our system if you want any of this to go ahead and work really well, because you've got to have the right people around you, and you've got to have... If I really asked every principal in this room, to be honest, and say, would you have loved when you took on your first school to be able to choose your deputy principal more easily? I reckon 90% of you, if you're going to be honest, would say yes. But our system is not equitable across all schools on how well we can staff, not just teachers, but our executive. And when we get it right and we're able to, it takes a long time. So your Pulse dashboard, I was very interested in when we did that workshop, shows that correlation. If you look at that correlation between efforts to have rapid inquiry cycles and indeed, any other program running consistently in your school, you can correlate it to your executive, how long they've been at the school, how, you might have had a huge turnover, and I've shared that with some schools and seen that. So I think in amongst all of this improvement, we've got to look at how our staffing in our directorate in general.
And that's why school improvement is hard. Because we're talking about complex, not complicated in that sense. And so what you're pointing into is one of the cause and effect relationships that contribute to school improvement, one of which is capability of the executive team and cohesiveness of the executive team, is one thing to consider in amongst all the things that you need to consider in effectively leading school improvements, effectively managing a school. All we can do in these sort of situations is to help identify what those things might be. Because there are schools who have had a stable executive team and see a sudden decline in various data because of a range of reasons. This is why you don't make a judgment around it. But let's say you see a sudden decline in data because a school, because of significant change in place, it's not capability, all those sorts of things. Like, you know, it's about actually working with all of those elements of data to actually work out which one it is. 100% agree. Having a highly effective executive team absolutely will work. But yes, as long as you're then doing the right things. But it is part of those decisions that you make as a leader, the variables you work with in actually being school improvement. I don't have an answer, as no one will here, but I do take what you say and understand and agree that is important.
We have to review how we staff our schools, and we haven't done it for quite a long time. I think the only other one thing I want to say is that first principle is really important, particularly not decisions or judgment, the second part of that. And we've had the discussion before, you and I, that's got to be not just in schools.
That's right. Yep.
It's got to be across the system, yeah. Right to the top.
Okay. Okay.
And
yeah.
The intention is still that these data principles will be for everybody,
the education
director.
Mm. It's really interesting. That example I just gave you around seeing some leadership or shared values and approach drop, if you have that perception without looking at the context of what happens, you're actually going to dangerous territory. So it could drop for a reason, but then it could be a good thing. Let it hand up back. Yep.
The table move, sorry. Look, it's an observation, just worth mentioning that we have on the table, there's the assumption that sits behind all this, which is that people have the knowledge and skills to use the data. Because data is wonderful, but not everybody has the background and the skills, and so I guess the question and the challenge is to make sure that with the data comes training and experience and expertise and practice.
So I think it's why we
That is very important, and one where we actually have to collectively work together, because everyone will prosecute data in a different way, and we actually need to understand and respect that. Yeah.
Remind you that there is an AAT and ALIA, so the English Teachers Association and the Literacy Association, conference in Canberra in July. Please take the notes. It's a lovely photo from an ACT principal, Mr.
Hugh Alba, who's in the room.
And we have shared registrations
closing at the end of May. The program will be released very soon. I also want to do a quick spruik for the flyers on your tables. Your SLCs may have seen this in the bulletin last term, but there's a repeat in today's bulletin and next week's bulletin. The SLC engagement series for term 2 is Challenging Conversations. Thank you.